Hi, this is R.C. Sproul inviting you to join me this coming summer for another breathtaking cruise to Alaska. This year, once again, we'll be going to Alaska from June 15 to June 22nd. And the subject I'll be lecturing on is Chosen by God. Now, some of you have already been with us on that voyage to Alaska, and you know really how spectacular that is. It's my favorite place to cruise. And in 08, we'll be going on another Holland American ship, the MS Westerdam, which will sail out of Seattle, Washington, and we'll be visiting Glacier Bay National Park. And if you've never been on that inside channel of Glacier Bay, you haven't seen anything yet. That is fantastic. And we'll be at Juneau, the capital of Alaska, the Sitka, Ketchikan, Victoria, British Columbia, and these ports of call. So if you're interested at all in planning a vacation with us in June of 08, where we'll be studying the doctrine of election together, for more information, give us a call at 1-800-435-4343. Again, that's 1-800-435-4343, or visit us online at ligonier.org. That's ligonier.org, and they will give you all of the information of the different levels of cabins that are available and the various price structure. So think about this. We'd love to have you, and join us. You'll have a great time.
Is there any real danger in believing and teaching Darwinian evolution? Stay tuned. Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul is next. Welcome to this Friday edition of Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul. Dr. Sproul is a minister of preaching and teaching at St. Andrew's Chapel in Sanford, Florida. Today on Renewing Your Mind, we'll be listening to a conversation between Dr. Sproul and Mr. Ben Stein as they discuss the new film entitled Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. Many of you may recognize Mr. Stein as the teacher in the 1986 film Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but he's much more than that. He's also a writer, public speaker, and political activist, and over the last couple of years has become deeply involved in a film project that challenges the neo-Darwinian scientific community and exposes their hostility to intelligent design and all those who believe in it. So what's the real danger of Darwinian evolution? What's the importance of challenging the accepted norms of the modern scientific community? Let's listen in on that conversation.
I got into this subject fairly recently. I've always been a very active member of the Right to Life community, even though I'm in Hollywood where such things are forbidden. But I was approached maybe 2.5 or 3 years ago by Walt Ruloff and some of his friends. He's the producer of the movie, and told about intelligent design. And I went for it immediately, and I said, because if Darwinism is correct, and if we're all just accidents, and if we're all just haphazard descendants of a mud puddle, then Hitler was right. And Hitler was totally right. You can kill 6 million Jews, has no moral significance at all, any more than wiping mud off your shoe would have. But if life did not originate randomly, not by random mutation and natural selection, but that there was some design involved by an all-powerful designer, and that we didn't just originate as human beings from lightning striking a mud puddle, then it's an incredibly horrible event which must never be repeated. And then we got more and more into the complexity of the cell, the incredible gaps in Darwinism about how there's no man has any idea of how human life began or how organic life began. And it suddenly dawned on me, there's much more sense, reason, logic on our side than on the Darwinist side. And the Darwinists are so fearful, so angry, so absolutely unwilling to concede an inch, that I realized theirs is a very tenuous hold on power, and we're going to try to make it a tiny little bit more tenuous. So we started working on this movie. We've been all over the U.S. and Europe and interviewed many, many scientists, and we have this movie, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. It's coming out April 11th or April 18th. and we hope it makes people question the scientific orthodoxy. And by the way, sometimes as I go around talking about this, people say, well, what about the decision in Dover, Pennsylvania? You're a Pennsylvanian. What about the decision in Dover, Pennsylvania that said that teaching intelligent design in schools was forbidden? And I say, I don't care about that decision. Courts said slavery was fine. Courts said segregation was fine. Courts said no black man had any rights that a white man was bound to observe. Courts say that abortion, murdering the innocent among us, the most innocent among us, is perfectly fine. So what courts say doesn't really go that far with me.
I'm so glad you're doing this. I love the title, Expelled, the first part of the title, because I remember when I was a kid, I got in a fight in high school, and they expelled me from school.
And I'm sure they let you back out.
They did, but it was only for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
But I experienced that where for those 3 days, I was not allowed on the property
of the school.
And that's what this is about. Only not a 3-day suspension, but we're expelling some of the deepest philosophical inquiries in the history of humanity. You go back in time, Immanuel Kant, the dean of Western philosophers who argued against the traditional arguments for the existence of God, said the one that bothered him the most was the teleological argument, the argument from design. Mm-hmm. He said, I can't get away from it. David Hume said the same thing. Are we allowed now to say in the school you can't study Einstein when Einstein says God doesn't play dice? That has to be expurgated from any study of Albert Einstein.
And Newton said he was doing no more than explaining how God had organized the universe.
And he said he was thinking God's thoughts after him.
So, yeah, you're not allowed to say that now.
Newton has to go. Einstein has to go.
If you said that in a college classroom now, if you didn't have tenure, you would very likely be denied tenure forever for that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're going to get letters and things, oh, our school's not like that. But it's happening more and more and more, and we see it in the newspapers every day. The thing is, the stance against intelligent design is not an intelligent stance. There's no logic to it. If you want to talk about irrationality, then try to talk about something coming into being from nothing by itself. It would have to be self-created, and for something to create itself, it would have to be before it was, which is a violation of the most rudimentary principle of knowledge, the law of non-contradiction.
Well, my debating partner, so to speak, Christopher Hitchens, said, well, then who created God? And I said, well, we don't have any problem with that question at all, because God is what always was and always will be. So that's what God is. God isn't a mind
bubble. I try to point out to people the difference between the concept of self-creation, which is what you call referentially self-destructive, because it's an inherent contradiction, and the concept of self-existence. The idea of a self-existent, eternal being that has the power of being within himself, dependent on nothing outside of himself to be, and is eternal, violates no formal concept of logic whatsoever. In fact, if, as I say, the simplest argument for intelligent design is this, if anything exists now, something has always existed.
Right.
Something is eternal. Or nothing could be now. When I was talking with Sagan about all of this, and I talked about you telling me that for eternity, that all of the universe was compacted into this infinitesimal point of singularity with all energy and mass compressed in a state of total organization and stability for eternity. Then one Tuesday afternoon at 3:00, boom, it blows up. Now, what happened to the law of inertia? I asked Sagan that. I said, you tell me that things that are at rest stay at rest unless acted upon by what? And he said, I don't want to go there. An outside force. You have to deny your own science to argue that way. You know, it's nuts. I mean, these are issues that have been debated for centuries, Ben.
I know that, but the difference, here's the difference. Here's what's so frightening. We live in the first country in the world to have a constitutional guarantee of free speech, and it is being eliminated in the place where we need it most, the college and the university.
You're right. And I just want to thank you again for the service you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Not just for people of faith, but for science itself.
I think for the country. For the country.
And for the dignity of human beings.
Oh, God,
that's what this, in the final analysis, that's what this is about.
I'll come hide in your guest bedroom when the Darwinists come to get me. Anyway, thank you so much.
We wish you all of the best success.
Thank you so much.
I hope everybody out there that's listening to this will make every effort to see this movie. Expelled.
No intelligence allowed.
No intelligence
right.
allowed.
April, middle of April.
Middle of April. Thank you, Ben, so much.
Thank you.
Well, R.C., there's the end of your second part of your discussion with Ben Stein, talking about his new movie, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, which is going to be coming out next month. Now, you and Ben Stein are unlikely allies to be disputing evolutionary theory. What do you hope interactions like this with Ben Stein will accomplish within the intelligent design community and the debate in general?
Well, John, one of the things that we have to understand as Christians that there are issues besides distinctively Christian issues that we face. There are issues that we call common grace issues. I'll march with anyone, Christian, humanist, pagan, atheist, whoever, in the cause of right to life, because here the sanctity of human life is at stake, and I share that concern with people way beyond the scope of the Christian community. And so we cooperate with people of different backgrounds and different persuasions. And what, in my work on apologetics, what I have found over many decades is a resistance by some folks in the Christian community to try to argue from a philosophical or rational perspective, for example, for self-existent eternal being or intelligent design, because they say, wait a minute, we're really after is the biblical God, not the God of Aristotle who provides a first cause as the unmoved mover. And they say, why are we entering into this debate when we don't bring into it the whole package of Judeo-Christianity?
Yes.
And that frustrates me for this reason. I'm saying you have to understand that the attack against Judeo-Christianity by secularists in our day is focused on the idea of the Creator. If they can dispose of the idea of creation, then they understand that with that, the whole structure of Judeo-Christianity collapses. So that, you know, the very first verse of sacred scripture talks about the work of God in creation. Now, the other part of it is people who resist intelligent design from the non-Christian sector see it as a Trojan horse trying to sneak Christian doctrine into the curricula of public education. And so I'm a little bit concerned from both perspectives for this reason. I think that what is at stake here is not just theology. I think science is at stake. I really do. If you rule out the possibility of intelligent design, you rule out the very philosophical foundation for all science. This is not, in the first instance, a religious debate. This isn't the monkey trial all over again. This is the question as to whether the universe, as we seek to understand it scientifically and through the natural sciences, manifests design. And the big question then is, if there is an apparent design to the cosmos, is that an accidental design, an unintelligent design? Which begs the question. Obviously, the most famous advocate against intelligent design in the 20th century and against historic theism was the British philosopher Anthony Flew. His famous parable, Flew's parable, is the most famous parable in Western history apart from the parables of Jesus. And it was a parable designed to show that the concept of God has died the death of 1,000 qualifications and that we don't need to appeal to some kind of transcendent intelligence to account for the appearance of design in nature. And, of course, just a few years ago, Flew astonished the whole Western academic world by announcing his conversion not to a full orb Christianity, but to theism, because he was convinced that the evidence for intelligent design is compelling. And his book just came out, by the way. I'm reading it as we speak. And Professor Flew, when he made that switch
was subjected to the most vicious attacks you can imagine. The blogospheres exploded from atheists who were furious that he would reverse his position. The thing we have to understand is that nobody is neutral with respect to the question of the existence of God. Everybody has a stake in this issue. If you hold a position of macroevolution, the bad news is that the human race emerges as a cosmic accident with no inherent meaning or significance. That's bad news. To say to human beings, you're ultimately insignificant. And you wonder why people would receive that with the zeal that they receive. Because for them, the good news inherent in that is, well, that means I'm not accountable to a transcendent, self-existent, eternal being called God, and so I can live however I want to live. I mean, so you have to understand that these things weigh heavily in the debate. And I would say, from a philosophical perspective, as I keep saying, the alternative to intelligent design is nonsense, absolute nonsense. Mm-hmm. And what people in Florida right now, they're having a big debate as to whether you have to be able to be allowed to teach intelligent design along with evolution in the classroom, and the legislature has ruled in favor of evolution. And I hear this all the time from people, and I look at them and I said, do you realize how many different theories of evolution there are? Mm-hmm. When you're talking about evolution, are you talking about microevolution, where you're talking about the adaptation of species? That is established. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And there's no philosophical problem with that. But if you go to the next level, to macroevolution, saying that all of life has emerged from a single cell fortuitously, I'm willing to say that is a scientific absurdity. I mean, there's no evidence for that whatsoever, other than the fact that all living things are made up of the same stuff. Proteins, amino acids, and the logic behind it is common structure means common source. That violates one of the most primary fallacies of logic, you know, the post-hoc ergo propter-hoc fallacy. That's not sound reasoning. So, again, I wish that the scientists are always saying to the theologians and to the philosophers, open your eyes, look at the data, have your empirical apparatus operating. And we say back to them, what's the foundation for your epistemology? Mm-hmm. Every scientific enterprise is based upon some theory of knowing. You know, how much does your scientific investigation depend on empirical observation? How much of it depends upon the categories of rationality, of deduction, of logical principles? Have you worked that out? You know, in the Enlightenment, the scientific method utilizes both deduction and induction, both logic and empirical investigation. And if you have the data and you're not careful with it logically, you'll make all kinds of silly conclusions from the data. If all you have is the logical system and you have no access to the external world, then all you have is formal theory. You have to have both. And I wish that people would at least be critical enough to ask the question, on what basis do I come to my conclusions about reality? And that's a philosophical question. It's not a biological question. Yeah. It's not a chemical question. It's not a question of physics. It's a question of epistemology. John, one thing I really want to emphasize to Christians is that when people say, well, if you're just all you're doing is defending intelligent design, you've sort of compromised, you've copped out, you're not really pleading for the biblical God. I'm saying, no, keep in mind that the attack against intelligent design is the attack against the Judeo-Christian understanding of God and creation. Again, if you can refute intelligent design, Judeo-Christianity falls like a house of cards. If you can't refute it, and if science and philosophy establish intelligent design, it's only a small step from there to the full orb doctrine of God that we have.
R.C., that's very helpful. I know that our listeners will find that helpful as we move forward with this discussion and debate that goes on in our society. I think the people that go see this movie are going to be astonished at hearing the leading proponents of Darwinism in their own words and hearing the steps that they are taking to muzzle anyone who would question standard Darwinian dogma. What's ironic is here we are as believers saying science and exploration and inquiry is supposed to be free, and you are inhibiting the act of free inquiry. How did that happen?
Well, it happened with the whole process of secularization. I mean, you know, Newton thought that his astrophysics was an effort to think God's thoughts after him. You know, Immanuel Kant, who carried no brief for classical Christianity, said the two things that amazed him that he couldn't explain were the starry skies above and the moral law within. But since atheistic existentialism has had a tremendous impact and relativism has invaded our universities, the relativist says there are no absolutes except the absolute, that there are absolutely no absolutes. And everything is tolerated except anything that violates our pet theories. Mm. I mean, this is a joke in terms of open inquiry. I mean, this is so unscientific. As I said earlier when I talked to Ben, that this mirrors and reflects the refusal of the cardinals in Italy to look through Galileo's telescope. And what's often lost in that historical black eye for the church was also that the scientists of the day refused. Because it's not just religious people that have trouble giving up their favorite theories. It's the scientists, too. You know, one thing that amazes me, John, if I go back and pick up my textbook in physics that I had when I was in high school, and if I gave you that textbook today and I said, now here is modern science, you would read that stuff and you would say, my goodness, who wrote this, a Neanderthal? I mean, the thing about scientific theories is how fast they change. Every week, we learn new things about what's going on in the cosmos. And every week, we have to stretch our paradigms in order to account for persistent anomalies. And when the anomalies become too many or too fierce, you have to have a paradigm shift. Mm. But unless you think that we have finally arrived at omniscient science, we better be open for truth wherever we find it.
R.C., everything that you have said today suggests that the life of faith does not negate the need for scientific inquiry, does it?
Oh, I think it demands scientific inquiry. And I follow the advice of St. Augustine and Thomas Aquinas that all truth is God's truth and all truth meets at the top. And that Augustine said we as Christians should try to learn about as much as we can about as many things as we possibly can. The Bible tells us that in addition to God's revelation in Scripture, he also reveals himself in nature. I believe all truth is God's truth. And so wherever we find truth, whether it's in geometric theorems or what, we are thinking God's thoughts after him.
Well, I look forward to seeing the reaction to this movie. I know that many people are going to be upset with Ben Stein, but I believe folks are genuinely going to be alarmed at hearing the scientific community in its own words.
Yeah, I think that what Ben is doing more than anything, the biggest service he's doing is not making a great case for intelligent design, but what he is doing is exposing the radical intolerance that's going on in the public education sphere against free inquiry.
Oh, that's very helpful, R.C. Folks, be looking out for this movie from Ben Stein. It's called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. I think it's due out next month, middle of April. There's a trailer that you can go see at expelledthemovie.com. That's all one sentence, expelledthemovie.com. We hope this has been valuable to you. Thank you, R.C.
You've been listening to Dr. R.C. Sproul and Mr. Ben Stein talking about the new movie, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, which exposes the hostility of the neo-Darwinian scientific community towards intelligent design and inquiry. We'd like to tell you about today's offer for a donation of any amount. During this week on Renewing Your Mind, we'd like to send you a book written by Dr. Sproul entitled A Taste of Heaven. In this book, Dr. Sproul examines the key components of prayer, praise, and sacrifices that God gave to his people in the Old Testament, showing how biblical principles can guide today's worshipers. The book, A Taste of Heaven, is available for a donation of any amount. So call now. Our toll-free number is 1-800-435-4343. Once again, that's 1-800-435-4343. You may also email us at info@ligonier.org. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is Ligonier Ministries, P.O. Box 863-595, Orlando, Florida 32886. Again, that's Post Office Box 863-595, Orlando, Florida 32886. We hope you've enjoyed today's Renewing Your Mind broadcast. Thank you for listening. Join us again on Monday as Dr. Sproul returns with a study of the book of Ephesians. Until then, have a great weekend and Lord's Day. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries with Dr. R.C. Sproul.